Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ Volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners. Care of Nature Now at kptz.org. Hello, and welcome to Nature Now for the third week of April 2018. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and today I'm excited to share a rebroadcast of a show that we did on the subject of spring migration. Now that we are well into the spring season, I do think it is well worth another listen to better understand the changes that are happening all around us now. Our featured guest is Christy Lassen, co-owner of Wild Birds Unlimited in Gardner. The host for the interview portion of this program is Mary Robson. Nature Now sound engineer Charlie Fleischman will also be joining us to share recent observations and events. But before we continue, let's hear this week's mystery sound, and then we'll share some recent natural history observations and news. So I can give you a hint. It is a bird. And whizzing through the air like a plane in a dogfight, the presence of these birds is a huge indicator of the warming season. When not in flight, these birds are often seen perched and preening on electric or phone lines. So now, with Charlie's help, things that are going on. We must say it has been a beautiful week of weather that we've had out here on the Olympic Peninsula. In addition to the flowering plants such as the red flowering currant, Indian plum, and salmonberry, red elderberry, blue elderberry, and tall Oregon grape, the presence of a fully flowering skunk cabbage has been remarkable. Skunk cabbage, of course, is found in wetlands and boasts a large basal rosette of leaves. It's also known as swamp lantern. Its flowers have an unmistakable large greenish-yellow bract with a thick and fleshy spike located within. Its robust aroma, while at its peak while flowering, actually attracts pollinators.
A few not-so-common spring migrators have been spotted in Fort Worden recently. As many as four mountain bluebirds were seen near the campground area of Point Wilson. Males display a light blue overall, while females have a more grayish body. And Sue Long spotted five whimbrels with their downward curving beaks on the beach near the Port Townsend Marine Science Center.
Have you noticed a large amount of drooped cylindrical-looking spikes on the ground recently? Well, red alder and beaked hazelnut have just about dropped all of their male flowers. Those are referred to as catkins by botanists. These catkins can blanket the forest floor, roofs, vehicles, and just about anything under its reach. Generally, catkins are formed before the budding of leaves, which are fully underway, pretty much at this point. In addition to the yellowish-green pollen produced by the coniferous cones, as we know, allergy season is also fully underway.
Days are getting longer and longer. At this point, we are receiving just over 14 hours of sunlight per day, with still 2 hours to gain at the peak of summer solstice on June 21st. Migrating birds are especially susceptible to specific habitats and conditions as they travel from the vast corners of the globe. I hope you enjoy our featured conversation on spring migration with host Mary Robson and our guest from Wild Birds Unlimited, Christy Lassen.
Today we're talking with Christy Lassen about migratory birds. This is the time when they're coming and going, and a lot of what's coming is things that we just cannot imagine how beautiful and interesting they are. And Christy works with Birds Unlimited, and she knows her birds inside and out, so she's going to help us wing along. And before we start that, Christy and I both had an announcement about our last show that included word about monarchs.
Several weeks ago, Mary and I were talking about planting milkweed to support monarch butterflies. One of our attentive listeners, a gentleman named Al, wrote in with a reminder to do not scatter exotic seeds, which can invade forests and fields. Stick with the native species that grows in Washington. And I can never pronounce this quite correctly. It's You may have to help me with that.
Well, I make it up as I go along.
Okay.
The native species is Clepalus speciosa. So we are going to start and talk about bird news regarding migration. And I thought one of the places to start is that a lot of people are aware that the railroad bridge is open again, right near the Audubon Society over the Dungeness River. They have revegetated, and I thought what was so interesting was that the volunteers chose to plant some native plants that look to me as if birds would like them. So what are some of what they're putting in?
They're putting in flowering red currants, red elderberries, blue elderberries, mock orange, and Natuka rose. There's Oregon grape out there and Pacific ninebark, service berries, thimbleberries, twinberries, all great plants for birds, bring in our native bird species.
That's a wonderful atmosphere, too. So when you are walking across the railroad bridge and on the Olympic Discovery Trail, look for the new plants and the birds that have migrated in. One of the things we have on our list today is how migratory birds are legally protected in the U.S. This year is an anniversary.
It's the 100th anniversary of the Migratory Bird Act. The Migratory Bird Act is one of the oldest wildlife protection laws around, and basically it protects birds from humans.
That's pretty comprehensive.
Yeah. The Migratory Bird Act provides that it is unlawful to pursue, hunt, take, capture, kill, possess, sell, purchase, barter, import, export, or transport any migratory bird or any part, nest, or egg, or any such bird unless authorized under permit issued by the Secretary of the Interior.
So some people who are students can get permits to
study for research,
right?
There's definitely things that you can do for research. There's special ones for our Native American population to use in rituals and things like that. They're religious ceremonies.
Well, what I was thinking about was I wondered what inaugurated this. What was it in 1916 that made Congress ready to pass the Migratory Bird Act? Do you have any idea?
From what I've read and understand is that it was pretty much the white egrets, that their population was almost completely wiped out because of the fashion industry to use their feathers for hats, for women's hats. And they realized that they were going to kill off this entire population if they were continued to allow the hat makers to collect the feathers. So they put laws in place to protect those birds.
That's amazing. And it's the surprising thing to me is that it has become so comprehensive. The law was negotiated with Canada. It includes Mexico, Japan, Russia. I have no idea how the enforcement is working in any of those places, but here in the U.S. it seems to be having some help. And this is partly because in the Pacific Northwest, we are part of the Pacific Flyway. You were going to discuss that because it's really something to imagine. It's amazing.
It's a huge migratory path for migrating birds. It extends from Mexico all the way up to Alaska in the United States and then even into Russia for certain types of birds.
Is it only on the essentially on the West Coast?
Just the Pacific Flyway.
Just the Pacific. Okay.
There's definitely other flyways through other parts of the United States, migratory paths, but that's the Pacific Flyway is our main one.
Okay. It's comprehensive in the sense that practically anything that's migrating here is going to come up that flyway one way or another, right?
Definitely.
So specifically, there are some birds that come in for summer, and they make our summer. Can you help us get a sense of what arrives?
My standard there's a couple that are like standard. It's going to be summer. Our summer residents are showing up. The goldfinch, American goldfinch, are definitely one. Our swallows are always a great sign that spring is here, and we're going to have violet-green swallows and tree swallows nesting, the barn swallows too. Mm-hmm. Those are my big ones. Rufous hummingbirds, too. They're one of the earliest ones who show up as migratory birds.
They have been to Mexico, right?
Yes. Yes.
We have Anna's that apparently has decided to forget the suitcase and stay here. But the Rufous go and come.
Some of the Anna's do definitely migrate, too. But I think every year it seems like a little bit of a larger population of Anna's stick around each winter. Evening grosbeaks are a great migratory bird, too. They're so beautiful, and they sing so loudly. It's quite fun to listen to them. Our purple finches are migratory. Some of the warblers, and then the bluebirds, too. Mountain and western bluebirds are migratory birds.
There seems to be a question about how the population of bluebirds is surviving or what's going on. I read somewhere that birds like the sparrow and the starling are nesting in places where the bluebird would normally nest, in a cavity in a tree. So I don't know whether that's accurate about bluebirds here. I haven't seen any, so I'm blank on whether they're where they are and what they're doing.
The majority of the western bluebirds that are out here tend to like to nest in higher alpine meadows, so okay. We don't see them too much. We see them in transition every now and then. I know Fort Worden had some migratory mountain bluebirds just like a week or two ago.
Oh, that's so
neat. There was a couple of sightings of them. And so we see them more in transition. There are some high alpine meadows where they do tend to nest. There's a family in Cary Blake Park who have cultivated a family of western bluebirds. They feed thousands and thousands and thousands of mealworms every year to get the bluebirds to come in. And there is a population that's nesting out there in Cary Blake Park.
Cary Blake Park is in Sequim, right? Yep. Just so people know.
And so there are some there.
Boy, thousands of mealworms is quite a commitment to keeping them going.
That's a lot of worms.
I might nest if someone offered me a mealworm, but I've just never eaten one, so I have no idea. Is there any thought about why so many of the summer birds are so colorful, especially the males? I know we haven't talked about this, but
Mating. It's totally related to mating.
Okay.
That's their main way to attract a mate.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting, you know, in areas where food is a lot more plentiful, tropical areas where birds have access to lots and lots mm-hmm. of fruit, their main thing that they focus then on is not providing food for a mate. It's colorful decoration. That's why parrots are just outrageously colored, and the birds of paradise are just bananas in their displays, because there's so much abundance of food that's not how they
that's
say,
not what you
I can
offer
for
right.
you. I'm fantastically gorgeous and you want to be with me.
But goldfinches, they are, I think, as you said, just absolutely beautiful for summer. I have seen them kind of coming and going. They're so brilliant. It seems to me that they would be easy to spot if you were a predator, but I'm just giving them all kinds of hope that, no, nothing is going to grab them that's not supposed to. We have swallows, and one of the things that I was thinking about summer and swallows is swallows are insect eaters.
Yes.
And one of the reasons why we continually counsel people to avoid using pesticides is that, at least half of these summer birds need insects, even
Definitely.
Hummingbirds, which they need them for protein.
Hummingbirds are insectivores, so are the swallows. They're all pretty much on the wing bug eaters as well. We need those bug populations for these birds to survive. Loss of habitat definitely affects them. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that the violet-green swallows are still on the species of concern list
okay.
for Washington State. I can't be 100% sure, quoted without Googling it, but there's definitely issues with that. The bug populations, the more bugs there are, the more mm-hmm. birds there are, and the more birds there are, the more bug control, natural bug control we have.
Exactly.
It's a wonderful balance when it's all working the right way.
I think, for instance, of aphids, which I've always thought of an aphid as sort of a little protein-packed bento box for a bird. People get all tangled up and worried about aphids. They are there to be scooped up and
kinglets.
Munched.
Oh, the kinglets love aphids. They are
okay.
big aphid eaters.
So yep. hopefully, if somebody is growing roses and concerned about aphids, just consider that they are part of the motion of things, and they will actually help the hummingbirds too. So.
Definitely.
And the other thing is that some insects, such as, I think ladybugs, lady beetles, also eat the aphids.
Yep.
So what we've got there is a kind of a grocery store that people can't see because their things are too small to be seen. So thank heaven for the insects. So what else do we want to comment about on migration? Because what I'm thinking about is we see the bird arrive, but it may have come thousands of miles. And that continues to astonish me. No matter how often I think about it, I think that bird, for instance, Swainson's thrush, may go all the way to Peru.
They're one of my favorites, too.
They are.
I adore that song. That song, to me, is the herald of spring.
It is.
It's so beautiful.
I haven't heard it yet, but we'll be talking a little more about them as we go along. So we also have something coming up, which is International Migratory Bird Day. Because they're crossing national boundaries, this is an international kind of a celebration. It might be year-round, but most of the time there is a traditional date, the second Saturday in May, to celebrate International Migratory Bird Day. And what else do we need to know about that? It's kind of wonderful.
I love the whole idea of citizen scientists helping out the organizations that are working to track bird populations. Mm-hmm. You know, they can't be everywhere all the time. So if we can get people to look in their backyards and report what they're seeing with the bird populations, you can get a really wonderful map of what's happening to our bird populations.
You can report it through Cornell, too.
Yes.
There's an eBird site, I think, on the Cornell site. What I'm thinking about, too, is that if we started thinking about this the way people think about the Christmas bird count, the traditional date in the middle of May, we would be standing in our gardens and going, oh, there's that goldfinch, and then you'd have somewhere to report it.
Definitely.
So yes. That's really fine. This is celebrating migration of, they said, nearly 350 species of migratory birds from North America all the way down to Latin America, Mexico, the Caribbean. It is still astonishing that birds are able to manage this. So we talked a little bit about the threats to the migratory birds. We've got the Pacific Flyway, which is established and used, and what is getting in the way of successful migration?
There's lots of hazards that they have to overcome. There's a lot of dangers out there for them. Power lines, severe weather, glass buildings, outdoor cats, things like that. But I think the one thing that impacts them the most, and definitely I feel like in our state as well, is the loss of habitat for them. It's interesting. You can actually watch the Rufous hummingbird migration. There's a few websites that track these birds.
Oh.
And you can see their migratory path. And over the years, their paths have changed. They're utilizing more urban areas rather than wild areas. And it's not because they're addicted to hummingbird nectar or, you know, our feeders or anything right. like that. But it's because it's the loss of wildflower blooms.
Uh-huh.
Those natural resources are going away from them.
One of the things that they do love is the native currant here.
Definitely.
That's the key
element to their migration.
Keep planting them, right?
Definitely keep planting them. Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife has on their website that every year in the state of Washington, 35,000 acres of our wild habitat is converted into residential or commercial development. So that's a lot of habitat loss every year just in our state.
It sure is.
So
in a decade or even 5 years, that's a lot of loss.
It's a huge space. Having things in your backyard to sort of help them out is really great. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife has the Backyard Wildlife Sanctuary Program.
Oh, yes. That's been on for a long time.
Definitely.
It's wonderful.
It's a great program to check out and see how you can help birds in your very own backyard.
It would be something fun to do with children and grandchildren, just to say, hi, we're going to figure out how to become a backyard wildlife
Definitely.
Sanctuary and then do it.
Yep. And so, you can get a little plaque through the state, which is fun to put up in your backyard,
we
too.
We like those little plaques.
Yeah.
Okay. So, gosh, we have gotten to the end of our time practically. I just wanted to close by saying, do you have a favorite summer bird? I think you indicated at the beginning that there are some that really...
Definitely the Swainson's thrush. They're my favorite. That sound of that echoey call through the woods in the early morning and in the evening is just, it's perfection to me.
Okay, so there we are. We're on to perfection. And those of you who've been listening to the mystery sound are going to be quite surprised to find that you've just heard us talk about it. So thank you, Christy.
You're welcome.
This has really been fun. It always is. And I'm happy that there's legalities and personal interest that can help these migratory birds. So thanks very, very much.
Thank you, Mary.
Well, that was fun to listen to. And to think about as we watch the birds move through our area, which then brings us, of course, to, well, what was that mystery sound? So let's hear it again. That sound came from a barn swallow. Sparrow-sized with a well-streamlined body of cobalt blue above, tawny orange below, and a deeply forked tail make them a sight to see. Barn swallows breed in the Pacific Northwest during the summer season. They nest almost exclusively on structures, under bridges, house eaves, barns, of course, and occasionally on cliff edges. Their nests are formed partially from mud held inside their mouth. The mud is mixed with grass for tensile strength and formed into pellets. They begin to form the nest by making a shelf to hold their weight. From there, they can easily create the sides. Take a look into the sky the next time you're by a pond or an open field to see barn swallows forage on flying insects such as beetles, bees, butterflies, moths. They have been observed to pick up grit, pebbles, eggshells, and even oyster shells from humans. Possibly these things help them digest insects and add calcium to their diets. Well, thanks goes out to the Cornell Ornithology Lab's Macaulay Library and allaboutbirds.com for sound recordings and some of the descriptive information. Looking forward now, Charlie, what's coming up?
Join the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society on April 28th for their Hawk Watch field trip at Bahokas Bay, Nia Bay. Field trip leader Denny Van Horn will take those interested to Bahokas Peak to watch raptors, sandhill cranes, and other spring migrants. This is a wait-and-see birding event while birds prepare to cross the Strait of Juan de Fuca to Vancouver Island. The event is on Saturday the 28th at 8:30 a.m. Check the Olympic Audubon website for details.
The Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society is also holding a lecture on migration by Thomas Setubal on May 5th at the Dungeness River Audubon Center, the Railroad Bridge Park. This lecture will be about the wonderful phenomenon of migration and the mechanisms that govern this mass movement of avian species worldwide. Emphasis is given to the bird species of Clallam County.
The Noxious Weed Control Board is partnering with local parks for weed removal and restoration in our public spaces. A rotation of work parties will take place until the end of the year. The Noxious Weed Control Board plans to measure their impact and publish results with the community. Join a work party at Irondale Beach County Park on April 28th. Contact Jefferson County's Noxious Weed Control Board's Coordinator Assistant, Mallory Weinheimer, for more information.
And the Olympic Chapter of the Native Plant Society is holding a hike at Tamanuas Rock in Anderson Lake State Park. Participants will hike to Tamanuas Rock via the rock sanctuary. They'll hike up to a bald overlooking the rock and then walk the trails of Anderson Lake until arriving at the state park there. Meet at the small Tamanuas parking lot area along Anderson Lake Road at 9:30 a.m. The hike will be led by Fred and Ann Weinman. Contact Fred Weinman at F. Weinman, and that's F-W-E-I-N-M-A-N-N, that's two N's, at cablespeed.com for more information.
On Saturday, April 28th, join the Port Townsend Marine Science Center and enjoy an afternoon on the water cruising around Protection Island and through the Protection Island Aquatic Reserve. Participants will learn about the history of Protection Island and the seabirds and marine life that make the island and surrounding waters their home. Go to the Port Townsend Marine Science Center website for details.
And I want to share there, too, that I am one of the Marine Science Center hosts for that tour. So I would especially encourage you to come out and join us. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of Nature Now. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live. Contact Nature Now hosts if you have comments, observations, or ideas. Email us at naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at 12:05 p.m. on Wednesdays with repeats here on KPTZ at 91.9 FM, on Thursdays at 5:05 p.m., and Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thanks for listening.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is Migrating Bird by Stella Marnalaki.